This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Hello, and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's Chris here, and I'm joined in the studio today with my fellow team members,
Phil
and Gordon.
And we're both fellows.
Oh, we're fellows,
as it turns out.
Fellows of what?
Of the Fellowship.
Fellows of the Fellowship.
Yes, oh, you're, just you're don't go overboard.
You might be Lord of the Rings, you mean. The Fellowship of the Ring.
I never really got into that.
Me either. So you're talking a weird, wonderful language there,
I
Gordon.
Love that book. I thought that book was absolutely superb. Superb.
Well, the book is fantasy. And then you go just like this. No, we are not fantasy. We are history.
Oh, yeah, but that's, sometimes that's a bit of a fantasy too, isn't it?
Especially if there's topics like we're going to be discussing today. We've got a follow-up reference to Matthew Shepard, his story, his life story, or his death story. We'll be talking about an event that you went to last Thursday, Gordon.
Yes.
And we'll be talking about, hopefully, a very influential fellow in the American political and social scene, Gore Vidal. We've got a subject with three A's, and it's not AAA. It's the ABC, the RLC, and Aspens. Now, you have to listen to find out what we all mean about that, but then there's some international gay and lesbian stories that we have come to our notice from the current press overseas. So, there we are.
Well, we cover all fields, don't we?
We hoped so.
We don't cover many sporting fields.
No.
Because that's generally considered boring.
No, well, I don't, yeah. But.
Well, let's get the coming back out ball out of the way, please, Gordon, because it's an interesting and heartwarming story.
The coming back out ball is done by all the Queen's men, Tristan and Beck, and it was another wonderful, wonderful night of very good entertainment, lots of music to dance, good food, and great conversation. Yeah.
Held at
the Melbourne Town Hall.
To be held again next year?
Well, I'm not sure yet. We just have to see what happens.
Why?
Well,
surely it was a success.
Well, they've got to get the feedback into it's put on as part of the seniors' festival. The government does give them some money to sort of help run it, and I guess that they've got to work out what it was like. One of my dinner partners was sitting next to me was Martin Foley, the Minister for Equality.
Excuse me. I dropped my pearls into the soup.
We're just having a lovely chat, you know, but that was all right. And then there was another lovely young man from Scotland who'd come out.
Sorry, he came out from Scotland, or he professed that he was gay?
Well, he said he'd left his boyfriend home, so I gathered he's gay.
Yes. All right, so that was one way of coming out. Yes. But the other coming out was?
But he's the assistant director of the National Theatre of Glasgow, and his boss, the director, had been talking to Tristan while he was in London at one stage, and Tristan had told him about the coming back out ball, so she went back to Glasgow, and she said to Robbie, you're going out to Melbourne for a week. I want you to go and go to the coming back out ball and see how they do it.
But why did she want to know?
We all remember that Tristan ran the coming back out ball.
Yes, yes.
We've had him on our show.
Why did Glasgow...
Well, she thought the idea was absolutely wonderful to have a coming back out ball for the older gay and lesbian community of Glasgow.
So they're
going to put it on in 2020, apparently.
So she thought that we were going to be a good example of how to do
how
it.
How to do it. How to
and,
do it.
And how to do it well.
And Robbie was very, very impressed. He said it's just that the entertainment was wonderful and the music was wonderful, the food was good. Everything was just a nice night. Yeah. And everybody sort of got on well.
A ball was had by all.
You're not wrong, Narelle.
It was held at the Melbourne Town Hall in the lower ground floor?
Upper floor. The whole town hall was packed.
Wow.
Jam-packed.
Okay. Any numbers?
Oh, probably about, I would say, estimated 500.
Wow.
Or so. I was on table 23, and there were many more tables after that. So there was a lot of people there, and they had an email, and they said, if you're not coming tonight, can you let us know, and they can call up somebody on the waiting list. So they had a waiting list for people to come. Yeah, it was great. Good night. Mm.
And it was a varied collection of pioneers, even younger people.
Oh, there was quite a few young people there. Yeah. They came along, and it's because it's a good night. Tristan did a wonderful job again. Yep. Tristan and all the Queen's men. Yep.
And a couple of supporting acts as well.
Yeah, they had Briefs again, which was, they're brilliant. They're a group of Australian men that do some really wonderful burlesque type stuff. Meow Meow was the singer. She's wonderful. I've never seen Meow Meow, but she's great. What a great voice that woman has, and a beautiful pair of legs for all the ladies to look at. And then the music was for the dancing was from a group called Electric Fields, which I'd never heard of, but was really, really good. Yeah, well chosen.
And you had a nice dance, did you?
I had some dances with Robbie and David and a few other people, yeah. Not you don't get to do close up, holding one another dancing on these things. It's one of those jumpy things,
All right.
You just move around on the floor. Yeah. But it was a wonderful night, a really wonderful night for the older gay community.
That is great to hear, Gordon. Thank you. And thank you to Tristan and the crew for making it such a success.
Yeah. Really was.
It sounds like it's got an international reputation now.
Well, there's a few people in different countries have been onto Tristan and all the Queen's men about what they're doing here in Australia for the older community.
That's good. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been reminding ourselves of the fact that Matthew Shepard was a young gay guy in the US who had been set upon by a couple of fellows that he'd met at a pub, and they committed a crime upon his being under the guise of sort of protecting themselves from his perceived homosexuality.
Well, I saw an interview on the television during the week about that, and they sort of said, well, we thought there was only him and we were two, we could do what we wanted, That was the way they felt. I thought, oh God.
And this was a crime that was committed back in 1999, I think it was.
Quite a while ago.
Quite a while ago, but it represented the social attitudes of that time. And I think that as a result of the court cases and the exposure of Matthew Shepard's circumstances and the fact that after being bashed up and his body left on the barbed wire fence, he died 6 days later, and the court case created a precedent within the US system.
Yeah, the Supreme Court passed the Matthew Shepard bill, which...
it's basically an act to define hate as a crime. And the Hate Crimes Act covers a lot of different categories, not just gay people. But he was killed because he was gay. And that sort of hate cannot be tolerated in society.
But they had a wonderful service for his the interment of his ashes at the Washington Cathedral. It was quite lovely. I saw quite a longish sort of thing on one of the television stations.
His parents have been, in two minds what to do with his ashes.
That's right.
His tomb, if it was publicly displayed, would become either a target of homophobics or just unnecessarily highlighted. And in a sense, I don't think he should be left alone now. He should be in a very public place where he can feel support.
Well, he is in a public place. His ashes are interred in at the Washington Cathedral, along with Helen Keller and a few other famous people.
Mm.
And his parents said that now they can come and visit him and know that he's going to be safe for the rest of his for all eternity, basically.
Yeah, it's a wonderful location. It's a cathedral, but in Washington, these are just monuments.
Yeah.
And, it's a public place and it's protected by federal law.
And it's
the most secure place they could have found for him.
But the Reverend Gene Robinson burst into tears, was crying at the end of the service. And it was a very emotional sort of service. And he's now can rest in peace for the rest of the time.
It's an uplifting end to a truly horrible story.
Shocking story, yeah. That was very, very good.
I think we're going to have some music.
The guitar has just walked in.
Anybody we know?
letting me play with trucks when I was younger. And then you went on to say, how will I break this news to your mother? And you say you cried for 3 days straight, daddy. And I don't understand it, 'cause loving her, it ain't an illness, and she makes me happy. Oh, we got to hold on. Family in forever. And the last time that we spoke, he said music's changed me enough for the better. And you say you cried for 3 days straight, daddy. And I don't understand it, 'cause loving her, it ain't an illness, and she makes me happy. Oh, we got to hold. Supposed to kiss an old hand. Do you remember when you told me, daddy, if they don't understand me, then don't go changing who I am just 'cause it makes them happy. Oh, we got to hold.
Joy 94.9.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. We have social commentators here in Australia who like to criticise any government that's in power and always come up with other stories and reflections upon their abilities or their inabilities. And sometimes these social commentators really have a great insight and get down to the real nub of the problem and often come up with marvellous suggestions.
So you're not talking about Sydney shock jocks? Who think that they're social commentators?
No.
Or the right-wing press, no.
Okay. So a commentator might grow up to one day be a French fry.
You've got to dig them up first if you want a commentator.
It's a commentator.
Oh, thank you very much. You're a smart fellow for a guy who's coming up for a birthday later on.
What are you saying, that knowledge and experience fade with age? What are you trying to tell me?
What did you say? I can't remember.
That's right.
Run that past me again. But in the US, there was a commentator who died back on the 31st of July 2012, although he'd been born on the 3rd of October 1925. He died at a rich old age of 86. And he was an American citizen and classified as one of America's great overachievers. We're talking about Gore Vidal. This little report I've got here says he's hard to categorise. He's a novelist, social critic, playwright, essayist, mystery writer, pulp romance writer, adventure writer, screenwriter, expat jet setter, literary critic, congressional candidate, political activist, and actor.
I wonder when he had time for breakfast.
To balance out all that positivity, he was known as being cantankerous, opinionated, gruff, and completely inflexible.
Yes, well, because I think when you're doing all those sort of jobs and what he was doing, it would make him very, very thing about people that didn't have an idea of what to do, you know?
Yeah.
I think he'd be very straightforward about things because he didn't have time to be trying to unravel other people's problems.
Highly motivated. His mind was in one particular direction, but I suppose that's where people say that he was opinionated and completely inflexible. Yep. I suppose some people, this is only my suggestion, but some people would now be able to put one of those modern psychological terms on his behaviour, whereas before we just said, you know, he's a cranky old bugger. He was a very smart cranky old bugger.
He was a great author. He wrote the very first gay book that I ever read back in the 1950s, which was The City and the Pillar.
What was that all about?
Oh, God, it's so long ago, I can't remember. But
I understand from what we were chatting about a little earlier, he was actually spilling the beans on what some of the gentlemen of New York were doing with each other, although they were happily married, or so-called happily married.
It was a very clever story, and of course I had to go to a very offbeat bookshop to get it, and then it was wrapped in a brown paper bag so nobody could see that I bought it.
Right. Here's being the first mainstream coming-out novel. Mm. And most of his subsequent literary works had prominent gay characters and gay themes, opening up the path for other writers to expand gay visibility in mainstream fiction. And I suppose that's what his different slant on the world resulted in.
I think he sort of led the opening up of gay literature, actually, because it then got all sorts of different writers that came out and could start writing about their own gay lives, you know. He was very, very good at that.
So at that time, being gay would have been a criminal offence.
Well, I think it's still a criminal offence in most parts of America.
Well, yeah.
In
the smaller parts.
In the smaller parts, yes. I think that's the thing. Because we were criminals here until, the 1990s, weren't we? In Victoria. Yeah,
exactly.
We were classified as criminals. But we didn't care. We weren't breaking any laws. We'd just been ourselves.
Okay. Removing the internet, do we have a modern equivalent to Mr. Vidal?
There must be some. I read a lot of gay writers, if that's what you mean.
A commentator, though.
A commentator on the thing?
If you look at some of the people he's hobnobbed with.
Ellen DeGeneres would be one. She's a commentator on the scene, I would have thought. I don't watch her show, but I know you do.
I'm thinking back, like, guests at his villa in, what was it, Italy?
In Italy, he was in Italy. Yeah, it was on the Capri Coast.
We've got names like Leonard Bernstein, Peter O'Toole, Andy Warhol, Tennessee Williams, Princess Margaret, Lauren Bacall, Paul Newman. They were the jet set.
But they were also leaders of fashion and ideas in those days.
And
as well.
Icons during their lifetimes.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
So it's almost as if it's a thing of the past.
Well, you don't sort of see it so much these days because here in Australia, for instance, with the Equal Marriage Act that came through, the anti-gay people were out in making their comments, but the gay community didn't sort of rise to the bait a lot of the time. You know, they didn't sort of say, no, we don't do this.
Well, we've been hearing that rubbish our whole lives. It wasn't a new fight.
That's right. No.
It was a new fight for them because suddenly we had some power.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and they didn't like it when the power was being taken from them.
But I wonder if the internet has killed off that type of personality.
Well,
because everybody has an opinion now.
But you get very opinionated people on the television and radios. You can hear all sorts of opinions if you listen to enough shows.
But with Gore Vidal, I get the feeling that the result of his life was a greater good.
Well, he did a hell of a lot of good to promote the gay and lesbian community's lifestyle, that's for sure.
But I don't see listed in his critics anything about a horrible self-promoter or anything. It wasn't like it was not all about me.
Well, of course, he came from a very, very well-connected family. You see, Al Gore is his second cousin or something rather, and the Gore name goes right through politics. Yeah. So he was up in the echelon of high power.
Having been born into a political family, would have known that's the way to do things.
Well, I know they've been in horror movies for years, Blood and Gore.
Yeah, we don't know who Miss Blood is.
But he also, apart from City and the Pillar in 1948, in 1968 he wrote another novel, Myra Breckinridge. The main character in that book undergoes clinical sex change and was a sharp satire on the contemporary mores of this time.
Can I tell you that right now, if the woman that played the thing in that role was Raquel Welch, she wouldn't get a job on that movie now because everybody would be up in arms about having a straight woman playing a transgender person, which is what is happening a lot in the film and television industry, where they're complaining about gay people playing, not straight people playing gay roles.
Yeah.
But it was not a very good movie, and he didn't like it. He thought it was the most awful movie he'd ever seen. It was never a very well-received movie. I didn't manage to see it, but it turned out to be one of his best ever novels, really. He was classified as a great novel.
But he wrote under different names, didn't he? His romance novels were written by Catherine Everard.
Well, that's Everard, yes. He's that probably name, Everard, yeah.
That name came because Vidal and his partner, Austin, met in 1950 in New York City's Everard Baths. So that's just a cheeky little...
Just a cheeky little reference to...
Which is very much an in-joke, I guess it was.
Probably was, yeah. But he lived most of his life in Italy, in the Mediterranean
coast. Well, he thought America was a bit homophobic.
That's right. Which he didn't like to live there.
Yeah. At that time, he would have been dead right, wouldn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
And he had a marvellous arrangement with Austin, his partner, his life partner. Well, we're not quite sure exactly, but they did have an arrangement.
They were not never intimate sexually, but they were intimate as like a locked team together.
Yeah.
But they also drifted when they wanted, if they looked for separate partners. Yeah.
Yeah, they would go out and find what they wanted, but not bring them home, sort of thing.
No.
It was off premises. Yeah.
It was a strange arrangement.
But it worked.
But yeah, I mean, I can see living with somebody because they're just the right person to live with. And you may not be physically attracted to them.
That's right, yeah, but you could have...
They obviously gave each other permission to venture out.
You could have an emotional relationship, you don't have to have a sexual one, you know. But
it's nice to have both.
It's better to have both, I think, you know. Yeah.
So he's got a very extensive collection of books that he's written and other reference documents that support our way of looking at the world and has given us encouragement over the years and set the world on a new way of thinking. You're on Joy. Been there, done that with Gordon, Phil and Chris.
You can find more Joycasts and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. We've got to get the three A's off our little list of topics to talk about.
AAA. That means it's top of the value, isn't it? When you gets a AAA rating,
Something like that.
No, it's the Auto Club in America.
Oh, is it? Okay.
The American Automotive Association.
Righto. But the first AAA is the ABC, which is the first three letters of the alphabet as
The Jackson 5 song.
That's right. Yeah, and.
Keep on topic.
It's easy as you and me.
Oh, yes. On the 5th of November, 1956...
My true love sent to me.
No.
It just sounded like you were going into song on the 5th of November.
The ABC's first television broadcast commenced in Sydney, and 2 weeks later, ABC TV came to Melbourne. It's almost... a failed or an expired technology. I don't know. Do you use it very often?
I have TV on every time, yeah.
Is it your friendly home companion, is it?
Well, not yes. Well, if my boyfriend's there, we sit and watch it together. Yeah. But I couldn't live without the ABC, either the radio or the television, quite frankly. I'm not one that likes to be constantly interrupted with advertising matter, because I think you lose the flow of something that's happening when it breaks off, you know. Yeah, okay. And they always break at the right time, you know, the wrong time for me.
But you would have, if you tuned in to the ABC, let's say in the early 1960s, you would be hearing this very proper English accent. You would have no idea you're on Australian television. It would be a very formal, stuffy channel, is the impression that I get.
But it didn't matter. But see, in the old days, when the ABC radio started, they used to get dressed up in dinner suits to go and appear on the radio. The announcers wore dinner suits to the radio. Well, nobody can see what you're wearing. These days, you can go in with next to nothing on.
Oh, it's a collar and tie and jacket. Wearing shorts and thongs under the desk.
That's right, yeah.
But they would have audiences to a lot of the shows on
radio.
That's
right, yeah, yeah, they did.
So they'd go to town halls and things. And
But the radio, of course, was going a long time before the ABC.
It was appropriate for its time.
That's right, yes. And it was a groundbreaking thing for Australia.
Groundbreaking, it was not, because we didn't get TV till 1956
when they the Olympic Games.
For the Olympics.
The Olympics was in 1956 when Channel 9 did the first broadcast.
Yeah. Yes. Well, America had TV in 1928 and the UK in 1936. So the ground had been broken well and truly.
Oh, yes, yes. Mm. But by the time we got it, they had improved a hell of a lot.
Yeah. But commercial TV, as you said, was current with the Olympics here in Melbourne in 56.
We had television in Melbourne before the ABC, that's for sure.
Yeah. Now there are people gnawing at the entrails of the ABC to take it down and leave us with just commercial TV.
Oh yeah, the funny part about it is that the ABC is rated as the most trusted broadcaster in Australia.
Unless you're a Liberal Prime Minister.
Oh well.
And then they're the devil.
Yeah. Well.
But the industry has come full circle.
It has.
Because in 1960, for instance, you would have had a TV license and you would have paid to view. Then commercial TV came along in 56 and you had to watch the commercials, but you still needed a license. And I assume, because I was an infant at the time, that that income went to run the ABC. Now, if you want to see unique content or particular series coming out of America or England, you subscribe to a cable download.
Hmm.
Or an internet download, which you pay for.
That's
either
right.
Either pay-per-view or subscribe.
So we've come
We've
full
gone
circle.
All the way around. Now, I don't have any of those pay services, but I used to have Foxtel that you paid through the nose for. You still get the ads. So yeah. You're not winning anything.
No. But that was the thing. I think that they gave away the license fee in the old days because they weren't getting enough money out of it because people just weren't paying the license fees and they had... They had vehicles that would go round that could tell
if you
had a television
TV
going.
Antenna.
Yeah.
That's why my TV antenna actually is within my roof space under the tiles.
I've got a friend in Aspendale who has exactly the same location for his antenna, but it's there because the one he used to have on the roof was eaten by cockatoos.
Oh, wow.
They just picked it to shreds.
Or it got crapped on.
Probably
by
waiting
seagulls,
for the juicy
seagulls.
Bit in the middle.
I have one in my roof as well, but that's been disconnected, and I have one that's out the back.
Yeah. The other A that we would like to talk about is the RLC.
Yes. Now there's a disaster happening.
Please describe what this RLC is and where is it located?
Well, the RLC is up near the Black Sea. Between the Black Sea and Tajikistan, or one of those places, and it's one of the biggest freshwater lakes in Europe, actually,
in the Asia part that
area, and there used to be fishermen that would be able to feed their families and all and sell the fish and all the rest of it, but then the Russians decided that they would use the water to irrigate their farms.
Yeah.
And there's not been enough water flowing in and dam the river that flowed into the Aral Sea.
Yeah.
And now, because the Aral Sea was actually fresh water, it wasn't salt water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now all they've got left is the island that appeared up in the middle of the two seas, the North and the South Aral Seas, and all the water's been taken out of there. And now the people that were farming the sea for fish and all the rest of it, they've got no jobs, they've got no money, they can't do anything.
And it's a disaster. The boats are high and dry because there ain't no water to float the boat.
Yep, totally disaster, of course, for the local area. But the Russians have been able to just build the dam and take the water, like something a bit like they do up in Queensland here in Australia.
Yeah, sort of
take all the water out of the Murray
or the head of the river
and to grow rice, cotton and rice, yeah, which we shouldn't be growing in Australia because we don't have the water for it.
It's very thirsty stuff.
Yes. The National Geographic Society have said it's just going to be an absolute disaster.
Mm. We muck around with nature and we
suffer reap the consequences.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that nature provided is a huge root system which had sprouting from it a whole series of trees. And genetically, all these trees, because they were shoots from this original one root system, they're all brothers and sisters. They're not
clones.
They are clones, exactly.
And it's amazing that it is the biggest living tissue in the world. It's bigger than the blue whale, and it's bigger than also almost anything. And it stretches for kilometres. I think it's America, isn't it, Philip?
Well, it's in Utah, and it covers about 100 acres.
They're worried, though, because some foreign invaders are eating the tree shoots, and that's depriving the root system of its energy, the light and the chlorophyll and everything to maintain itself. And it's these deers and the other creatures that are eating it all off. But they're so prolific because there's no wolves anymore because they've been taken out of the
system.
Chain.
That's right, yeah. But I see there's some parts of America that they are reintroducing wolves, much to the chagrin of the sheep farmers or whatever it is that they were, the cattle farmers, because they say the wolves kill their animals.
And the three little pigs.
Oh, yeah, that's
They're very much them. Against the wolf coming
yes,
back.
Yeah. Yeah, so they're having a bit of a problem with that root system.
In some ways, they've recognised that nature has been interfered with, and they've got to take steps to redress the imbalance, and there are consequences of implementing that redress.
But the whole of human nature is to try to change the way we live and try to change everything. We do the same thing here in Australia, where we cut down forests, which have nesting places for birds and food for birds and all the rest of it. We just cut them down for firewood or something or other. It's really quite stupid.
We don't recognise the consequences until it's too late, quite often.
And we've been known to introduce some wonderful, wonderful species like rabbits and cane toads and all those sort of things. They've done real helpful, haven't they,
for our
habitat. Yeah, great stuff. Yeah, but anyhow, that's what's happened. We've got to stop doing these stupid things.
Otherwise, nature will not work in our favour.
Well, the first thing they've got to do is to do something about climate, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, I think so. Yeah. Revegetate the world. You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that, Joy, 94.9.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Turn us on anywhere.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that, Joy, 94.9. We've got a little bit of international reportage for your information.
Oh, good. That's better.
Reportage.
We like reportage, yes.
One of them is Chelsea Manning.
Had a very interesting history, hasn't she?
Was drummed out of the US Armed Forces because of WikiLeaking.
I hope she gets that fixed.
But she's gone and had that fixed up.
Went to a Wiki plumber.
The current report is the fact that after a decade of fighting through prison, the courts, hunger strike, and through insurance company, she finally got surgery on the week ending the 23rd of October 2018, confirming her preferred gender.
She's completely now transgendered, yes, that's right.
I understand that in some countries you don't actually have to have what I'm going to call the snip, but I'm not trying to make light of that particular activity, no. that event. But some people, it is a required action because it's a surplus piece of flesh that the body doesn't need anymore, and it screws around with my brain because the rest of my body says I'm female.
Well, that's it makes the whole thing complete then. You see, that's the completion of the complete transgendered, and good luck to Chelsea Manning. But she's had a hell of a job. But one of the last acts that Barack Obama did before he left the presidency was to pardon her and release her from jail. So now she's out and can lead her own normal life, which is rather good.
Mm. Well, she's trying to. She was going to come out here on a speaking tour.
Oh, she got stopped, didn't she?
And our lovely free speech government basically said, well, we're too scared of America. You better not come. Welcome to the free world.
So she did it. She did the whole thing from a conference, television conferencing thing. Yeah.
Sneaky.
The free speech, you mean. Yep.
However, President Trump has decided, though, that the transgender policy and birth certificates and identity descriptions and things have all got to be brought back to base one. All over again.
Whatever you were born with is going to be on your passport come hell or high water, and that's what I'm telling you.
So all the advances for the trans community over the last 10, 15 years have been wiped out because what he proposes gets through.
Would that have to go to the Supreme Court to do anything to be passed as a legal judgment?
Well,
or
he can do that now because he's stacked the courts.
Well, he's stacked the courts. That's what I was getting at. Yes, yes, that's what I'm getting at. So it's the whole thing for the whole LGBTIQ people in America now is really up for grabs because of the way he stacked the court with that last bloke, Mr. Kavanaugh.
Well, with any legislation, it's a series of definitions, then with some words of action to implement. Now, what he's proposing is to go back to the definition stage and say, before we say what can occur, we've got to make sure that this definition now suits our way of considering the world.
Yes, he's a strange man, is Donald Trump. He really is. It's just quite unbelievable what he does.
But you can't fight reality. There's a hashtag on Twitter called "Won't Be Erased," and it's basically representing the estimated 1.4 million Americans who don't identify with their gender at birth.
Yeah, yep.
They're not going to go away.
No, they're there. They're human beings. I can't understand why people carry on so much about the way we are. We do no harm to anybody.
It's the binary concept again.
Yeah, I guess.
Yes or no, black or white.
Yeah, yeah.
That is male or female.
His terminology is, I'm protecting everybody. I want to protect our country.
He's not protecting everybody if he's doing that.
What's the threat?
It's discrimination, and he is now.
But he is discriminating.
Yeah.
Instead of fighting it, he's causing it.
Yeah.
Couldn't he be had up for hate?
Well,
be an interesting loop. But he's the president of all Americans, not just the ones he likes.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. But how do we know he's going to do anything? Because so far he hasn't. Yeah.
I'm waiting for the wall.
Are you waiting for the wall?
Yeah, it's going to come
west of the wall. Yeah.
Something like that. Now, a report that we've seen from the British scene is that they're considering now that HIV-positive gay and bisexual men have now, with modern medications, the opportunity to ensure that they don't pass on anything of their HIV status. That's with the new pills called PrEP.
Mm.
And therefore, that opens the opportunity to have families, to have offspring that don't carry any of the HIV in the child.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that they can do this, because with PrEP, when the undetected and untransmissible U equals U, it works, because there are straight people that have had HIV and are on PrEP and don't have this. They're U equals U.
Mm.
And they're having children that the children are not born with the HIV. Mm. They're born completely normal. But there's a whole stigma in Britain about HIV people going to the clinics to have surrogacy. And they have to prove that they have no diseases that, like HIV, of course, that can be passed on. And they say that they're protecting the surrogate people from any chance of the virus. Well, but you can do it if you're straight, but you can't do it if you're gay.
Mm.
Another sort of a bit of discrimination somewhere along the line. When people are completely undetectable, why would it matter?
But it's good, I suppose, in some ways, that they're now considering this as a barrier that can be broken down and should be broken down and not trapped behind legislation that is out of date.
Yeah, but apparently you can go to America and have the and have surrogacy through, even though you're HIV positive but completely negative with PrEP.
I guess there's caution also, if we've learned anything from the whole AIDS crisis, is that initially we knew nothing. It's taken us decades to get to this point where we can be undetectable. Doesn't mean we know everything.
Oh, God, no. There must be
rolling a dice there somewhere.
There must be certain people that probably the PrEP doesn't take effect with, you know, and they figure that they're free of it, but then they get tested all the time to make sure that they are. You know, this is the only way to do it. Keep testing even when you're on PrEP just to make sure that nothing has happened.
But that's not all people with HIV.
No.
But only the ones who have come forward to be tested.
Yeah.
And even if, I'm just surmising here, and I'm with my own lack of knowledge, I wonder if the baby that is born from an HIV-positive father is then detected with HIV, they could go on to PrEP, couldn't they? And they'd be undetectable
for
the rest of their life. I mean, it's a whole weird concept to imagine you've got to take a little blue pill every day.
There have been babies born to HIV couples.
Yeah.
I know one particularly, and the baby was born, and it was born cesarean, so it wasn't born through the natural way, because that was one of the ways they could become infected. And when the baby was born, it was put straight onto AZT, I think it was at the time. And the little girl is now a married woman and what have you, nothing wrong with her.
It does seem that in the placenta there is a lot of protection there.
Yeah, that's right.
And the baby is, I believe, is well protected in this safe zone.
Yeah, well, there was the apparently it's when the baby's born, the natural body fluids of the mother can get into the baby's eyes, and that's where they can be infected. Mm. That's when they could be infected. Yeah. This is one of the things I read. So cesarean was the opposite. The way to go, and
hail Caesar.
Yeah, well done. Yeah,
well, there you are.
And she was a beautiful little baby. We saw her often. Yeah.
Yay. On the 6th of November 1999, Australia voted against becoming a republic in a national referendum.
Now, and it's rearing its ugly head again, isn't
it? Well, it's not having much luck, because the mob that are in power at the moment, the royals, they've had the PR crew into the family, into the firm, and they are putting out very attractive members of the team.
But do you see, the Queen has also said herself, she's getting a bit sick and tired of Australians sort of saying they're going to wait till she dies before they do anything about it, which is a bit of a thing about the Queen, isn't it? It says something about her, the poor old love. She could live to be 102.
Yeah, but what she's done, or the firm has done, is actually provided a continuity of her family in a very attractive and productive way with Wills and Harry.
Yeah, well, Wills has got two, hasn't he? Or three now, three. Two or three. Anyhow, he's got enough. They've got an heir and a spare there as well. And so, that's what Diana was for.
Yeah.
And then you've got Harry, his wife is pregnant. But then Harry doesn't have to worry, because he's so far down the list, he could just be a normal human being.
Yeah, but he's good PR material. The little red-headed boy is now somewhat of a cute little red-headed hunk.
Oh, yeah, but he's also got humanity and a whole thing for what he's been doing, and when you watch what he was doing out here with the Invictus Games, you just think what a wonderful man he is, you know.
Well, if you look at it from a marketing point of view, which is how you look at most things in life, you've got Princess Diana and Prince Charles. The kids took on her personality and persona, which would have been a marketing coup, because if they turned out like him, they would not be the rock stars they are today.
Yeah, well, you just don't know. But
would say Harry, look at his ears.
The time that Diana had with the two boys, she instilled into them some sort of graciousness and empathy with the ordinary people that walk the streets.
She gave them humanity instead of royalty, because that's all they would have learnt without her.
It's about time for us to go. So thanks very much for being with us. Join us next week or check the next podcast. See what little interesting topics we have to chat about next week.
Yeah, it'll be all different.
So until then, bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.